Hello, I'm Jeff Watts. Welcome to Advances in Eye Care, a podcast dedicated to bringing you up to date with information on the forefront of optometric research. In this edition, we're going to take a closer look at some of the new specialist practice techniques that are set to form the future of optometry. We've invited four specialists into our recording studio to talk about the most recent breakthroughs in their areas of expertise. We start with a review of selective laser trabeculoplasty, which reduces intraocular pressure by increasing aqueous outflow through the trabecular meshwork using a single painless laser procedure.
Hello, my name's Dr. Deacon Hall. I'm a therapeutic registered optometrist and I'm lead for community ophthalmology services in West Kent. Following the publication of the LIGHT study, it's clear to me that optometrists need to be more involved in the delivery of SLT to meet the treatment demands of patients with ocular hypertension and glaucoma. It's great that this podcast is highlighting the extending role of optometrists in eye health, and I'm delighted to have been asked to be involved.
The lowering of intraocular pressure, IOP, is the mainstay treatment for primary open-angle glaucoma and slows down the further progression of the disease. Many patients present with raised IOP but without optic nerve damage, and this is termed ocular hypertension. Many ocular hypertensives convert to glaucoma, so lowering their IOP helps reduce the risk of the disease becoming established. The way this is undertaken may be undergoing a major change in the light of the recently published Lasering Glaucoma and Ocular Hypertension, or LIGHT, study. This suggests that the use of a laser treatment, selective laser trabeculoplasty or SLT, may replace the need for ongoing use of IOP-lowering drops. Dr. Hall, welcome to Advances in Eye Care. First of all, what are your thoughts regarding the findings of the LIGHT study? I mean, do you see this being the end of ongoing pharmaceutical control, except maybe in exceptional circumstances?
The findings of the LIGHT study are transformational in terms of service planning and delivery for patients with glaucoma and ocular hypertension. The LIGHT study shows that patients treated with SLT rather than topical medication had similar quality of life scores, but that 75% were still eye drop free at 3 years, and slightly more patients were at target pressure in the SLT group compared to those treated with eye drops. Importantly, there was a 97% probability of SLT being more cost-effective than eye drops.
Can you give an overview of the selective laser trabeculoplasty technique?
Selective laser trabeculoplasty is a frequency-doubled, Q-switched, neodymium-YAG laser procedure. It reduces intraocular pressure by increasing aqueous outflow through the trabecular meshwork with a single, painless laser procedure with minimal recovery time and good safety profile. The exact mechanism of action of laser trabeculoplasty is not well established. Various theories have been proposed as an explanation for the increased aqueous outflow seen following successful laser trabeculoplasty, including mechanical, cellular, and biochemical theories. The procedure has few adverse events and is relatively easy to do, with the patient seated at a laser in a similar manner to being seated at a standard slit lamp microscope, and requiring a similar skill set from a clinician as performing standard gonioscopy.
What are the main advantages of the technique over topical hypertensive drops?
The main advantage is that the patients are more likely to be drop-free. We know that glaucoma eye drops can be associated with adverse effects both on the ocular, periocular, and systemic tissues throughout the body. Ocular surface inflammation is a constant problem in glaucoma clinics. Offering an alternative is important. Secondly, from a service delivery perspective, the treatment has been shown to be more cost-effective. Finally, avoiding topical treatment avoids the issue of compliance, which is often an issue with asymptomatic conditions, such as ocular hypertension and early open-angle glaucoma. This means that there is an opportunity to reduce the number of patients who fall into that cohort that lose sight due to compliance issues.
At present, who's qualified to use the technique? Can hospital optometrists undertake SLT?
Optometrists with glaucoma qualifications are already treating patients with ocular hypertension and glaucoma, and as I understand it, hospital optometrists are already undertaking SLT in a number of clinics up and down the country. It's important that these optometrists are given the opportunity to more readily offer SLT to ensure practitioner-based health inequalities do not arise. The delivery of glaucoma care by optometrists is discussed in section 1.5.16 of NICE guidance 81, which already includes SLT as part of the treatment options for people with chronic open-angle glaucoma. Section 1.6.5 of the same guidance says that treatment must be delivered by a healthcare professional who has a specialist qualification and experience. So NICE guidance 81 has included the use of SLT by qualified, experienced optometrists for a number of years. The LIGHT study brings this to the fore, suggesting that many more patients should be offered SLT at the earliest stage in their treatment plan.
What are the restrictions on SLT being offered in community optometry practice?
The challenges of delivering SLT outside the hospitalised service fall into four areas. Firstly, training and experience. Whilst SLT has been part of the remit of specialist registered optometrists for a number of years, it is recognised that such optometrists will need training to deliver SLT and experience to fulfil the requirements of NICE 81 guidance. Within the hospital eye service, glaucoma and SL training is often delivered at a local level. Parts of this training may or may not relate to Health Education England's curriculum developed by the Royal College of Ophthalmologists. But optometry remains an independently registered profession, bound by the Opticians Act and not by definition a profession allied to medicine. So in my view, its professional training must remain independent. The College of Optometrists is still yet to establish training requirements for optometrists to perform SLT. This means that the training pathway for optometrists delivering SLT still lacks clarity. Given the publication of the LIGHT study, this needs urgent attention. I'm pleased to be involved in a small way with training at Moorfields Eye Hospital. We aim to start delivering laser training programmes to optometrists next year. The second challenge for optometrists delivering SLT outside the hospitalised service is the need to be appropriately indemnified, and this requires work by our professional association, the AOP. Thirdly, the premises and location of services need to meet the requirements of laser procedures, which may include meeting a number of standards and potentially registration with the CQC. This is because although primary care optometry services are exempt from CQC registration, ophthalmology services are not. And fourthly, like all new services, financial challenges need to be met. Support is needed for training, capital outlay, maintenance, and other costs. From an NHS perspective, moving funds into community services requires a joined-up commissioning approach. This commissioning landscape is, once again, in a state of flux, and this makes the delivery of any new services even more challenging.
In your view, would SLT being available in community practice have any advantages over hospital-only provision?
SLT placed in community ophthalmology services allows for the delivery of treatment at diagnosis, avoids treatment delay, and has all the advantages of community ophthalmology services, which have already been agreed by both the Royal College of Ophthalmologists and the College of Optometrists within the Clinical Council for Eye Health Commissioning. This includes managing demand and ensuring care pathways are patient-centred. Patient choice is important, and the Patient Standards for Glaucoma, recently published by the International Glaucoma Association, reiterates this. The Royal College of Ophthalmologists' workforce census illustrates a shortage of ophthalmologists in the UK. Simply put, there just aren't enough ophthalmologists in the UK to deliver SLT to all the patients that the LIGHT study suggests need this treatment. Unless optometrists step up, patient care may well suffer and access to SLT will be inappropriately denied to patients.
How might SLT be introduced and used in practice by suitably qualified, of course, optometrists?
In my view, SLT should be delivered by optometrists that are glaucoma qualified and therapeutically registered. Such optometrists need to demonstrate training and experience in SLT before offering this treatment. They need to have appropriate indemnity insurance and need to ensure that their clinical environment meets the requirements for laser treatment. Community ophthalmology services already employ IP glaucoma-trained optometrists to deliver glaucoma care and treatment, and my thoughts are that it is within such services that SLT delivered by optometrists could be most readily introduced.
What's your key takeaway from the study?
One key outcome from the LIGHT study is that in patients with open-angle glaucoma and ocular hypertension, SLT is a more cost-effective first-line treatment option than eye drops, with 75% of SLT-treated patients eye drop-free at 3 years.
Thank you, Dr. Hall, for being with us today, and we look forward to seeing how SLT is embraced by optometrists in community practice in the coming years. So, now we've heard about the science behind the technique, we're going to find out exactly how the selective laser trabeculoplasty procedure works in practice. Paddy Gunn from Manchester Eye Hospital was the first optometrist to deliver the SLT treatment, and he's here to talk to us about the procedure.
Hi, my name's Paddy Gunn, and I'm a principal optometrist for education and training here at Manchester Eye Hospital. I'm very much interested clinically in glaucoma and glaucoma research, looking at patient pathway, looking at glaucoma virtual clinics and patient experience. Today, I'm going to talk to you about the developing role of optometrists in delivering glaucoma laser procedures, in particular selective laser trabeculoplasty.
Paddy, hello and thank you for joining us. First, to best understand your role in delivering SLT, could you give a brief description of your current role and background in glaucoma management?
I'm currently principal optometrist for education and training here at the Eye Hospital, and I've been working here for over 9 years now. The role of education and training here is to help deliver and develop training and improve the clinical skills of optometrists, doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals here within the Eye Hospital. But we also do a lot of work with community pre-registration optometrists and optometrists developing their independent prescribing skills and experience in the community. I've always been very much interested in glaucoma clinically, and pretty much all of my clinical role here relates to glaucoma care and management.
What about the team you work with?
We work with a brilliant team. It's very much a multidisciplinary team here at the Eye Hospital. So we've got 5 consultant ophthalmologists that specialise in glaucoma, as well as numerous optometrists, different grades of doctors. We've got 2 fantastic glaucoma specialist nurses, and a big team of ophthalmic science practitioners that all work together.
When did you yourself start using SLT?
So I started doing my laser training around about a year ago. And so optometrists being involved in laser treatment is something that we've been talking about here for a number of years. And it was really knowing that the LIGHT trial was due to be published last year that really kind of spurred us on in terms of getting involved in lasers. And so I've been training both in selective laser trabeculoplasty and also YAG periphleurodotomy, which is another glaucoma laser procedure.
You're a member of a renowned glaucoma team in Manchester, well known for developing advances in screening and referral. You were the first optometrist to deliver SLT treatment.
Yes, I was the first lucky optometrist to deliver laser treatment. And so for the time being, it's just been me that's been doing glaucoma lasers from the optometry team, but that's certainly likely to change in the future. We've been working very closely with the glaucoma management team to make sure that we've got really robust training and accreditation set up.
Can you describe your training?
And so in terms of the training that I've undertaken, it's very much been an apprentice type training. So working alongside one of our brilliant consultant ophthalmologists, Ken Yao, where I've been shadowing and observing him initially. He was very keen from the outset to get me performing laser almost straight away. We've got a teaching eyepiece, and so he's been able to watch and feedback my performance on laser. And then with time gradually moving across where I've been doing the lasers alongside Mr. Yao, so he may not be there when I'm delivering the laser, but he's available if I've got any problems or queries. He's been there at the stage where we're examining patients after their laser to give feedback. And then with time moving forward to me starting to establish my own laser list that run an environment where there's always a consultant or somebody available there if I need any help and support.
Which patients are offered SLT? For those on topical hypertensives, is SLT currently indicated only when drops don't work?
The light trial's given a really strong evidence to show that patients should be offered SLT at first appointment or at first diagnosis. However, rolling out such a big change in practice is something that requires a little bit of thought and planning. And so whilst we are still offering it much sooner in the pathway to patients, which I think is great for patient care, I think that there's still a little bit more work done before we can implement the recommendations from the light trial fully.
Perhaps you can walk us through the procedure from the patient entering the room to leaving again.
So we'll read the notes, write up the notes for drops so that when patients arrive at the clinic, they can have their visions measured by one of the nurses, and the nurses can instill some eye drops that we need prior to them undergoing the laser procedure. Once the patient's had a little bit of time to let those eye drops work, the patient will come through to see me. We'll spend good amount of time to talk through what's involved with the procedure. All patients should have been given a patient information leaflet at the stage when they were listed for the laser, so they've had chance to read over that, think of any questions or concerns they may have. And so we'll talk through any of those questions or concerns before asking the patient to sign a consent form if they're happy to go ahead with the laser procedure. At that stage, we will assess the patient's eye pressure before doing the laser treatment, as well as reconfirming the patient's medical history and any allergies. Once all of that's done, the patient will be taken through to the laser room and we will perform the procedure. And so it's quite a quick procedure. It just takes a few minutes on each eye. And it tends to be quite a comfortable procedure for patients. Patients seem to tolerate the procedure very, very well. Once the laser's been done, what we like to do is reassess the patient's eye pressure round about an hour after the laser treatment. So we always instill some eye drops to help lower the eye pressure, because one of the known complications of the SLT procedure is a possible spike in eye pressure. We'll then send them away for a cup of tea or coffee, bring them back after an hour just to reassess the patient. And if everything's okay with their eye pressure, we can then let the patient go home.
Do patients normally come back for any checkups?
So in the past, I think that a sooner checkup was done at 2 weeks, but for a number of years now, we've been doing that first checkup at 6 weeks' time, because it's very unusual for patients to have complications after selective laser trabeculoplasty. And if they do have complications, they tend to present quite soon after to the emergency eye department. And so we tend to review our patients at 6 weeks' time. And this is really because the laser doesn't really work fully until 6 weeks' time. So that's a sensible time to then bring that patient for a checkup to see if the laser treatments worked. So at that visit, we'll bring them back, check to see how their eye pressure control is, and then depending on the outcome of the laser, we can decide on that patient's ongoing management plan.
How do you deliver the laser treatment?
And so in terms of how the laser's actually delivered, first of all, we'll put some anesthetic drops in the eye. So we make sure that we give plenty of topical anesthesia to make it really nice and comfortable. Once the patient's set up comfortably, what we'll then use is a gonioscopy lens that's suitable for laser treatment that rests on the front of the eye. And so that needs a little bit of coupling jelly to make sure that you've got a smooth connection between the lens and the eye, and also to make things comfortable for the patient. The lens that we use is a one mirror lens, and so it needs to be rotated through 360 degrees on the patient's eye whilst you're delivering the procedure. And around about 100 applications of the laser are made throughout 360 degrees of the trabecular meshwork. In terms of the approach, we tend to start on a energy level of 0.6 millijoules. What we'll do is apply the beam to the trabecular meshwork and apply the laser. If we don't see any response whatsoever, we will gradually increase the power until the level where we start to see what look like little small champagne bubbles that appear. Once we get a series of perhaps two applications where we're seeing those champagne bubbles, we'll just lower the energy level to just beneath that. Because of the fact that the trabecular meshwork varies very much so in pigmentation, it's really important to recheck and to recalibrate the power that you're using whilst you're moving through different areas of the trabecular meshwork. Once the laser treatment is completed, we'll then remove the lens and we'll instill some eye drops, apraclonidine, which is very effective at lowering the eye pressure, just to try and minimise the risk that the patient may have a spike after the laser treatment.
I wonder, is the conclusion of the paper likely to be questioned by some specialists? The paper concludes that SLT, and I'm quoting, should be offered on a first-line treatment for open-angle glaucoma and ocular hypertension, supporting a change in clinical practice. That seems pretty definitive.
I think it's important to remember that whilst the recommendations from the LIGHT trial suggest that patients should be offered SLT as a first-line treatment, doesn't mean that all patients are going to want to have SLT as a first-line treatment. And I think that one of the brilliant things about the LIGHT trial is that it just improves patient choice.
Suppose an optometrist is asked about the treatment by a patient who may have read good reports implying that it replaces the need for long-term eye drop use. What would you advise?
So I think it's really important for optometrists to have an understanding of what SLT laser treatment is indicated for, how it works, what the kind of success rate is of a selective laser trabeculoplasty, and also what the potential complications are. I think that it's really important that optometrists have a good understanding of all glaucoma treatments, and I think they play a really, really key role in helping to support and advise patients, particularly between their visits at the hospital eye service or if they're being seen as part of a scheme in the community. I think that having that awareness, being able to respond to patients' concerns, but most importantly, liaise with their colleagues that are responsible for that patient's glaucoma care. And so, for instance, if you saw a patient that had some interest or some questions about that, and as an optometrist, you weren't 100% sure whether that patient was suitable or not, I think it'd be perfectly reasonable if that patient was interested to perhaps write a letter to the person responsible for that patient's care to try and create more of a sort of three-way communication between patients, community optometrists, and the hospital eye service or whoever's responsible for that patient's glaucoma care.
When do you think this option will be available for optometrists on the high street?
So in terms of as an option for delivering selective laser trabeculoplasty in the community, I think that's a real challenge. I don't think that any optometrist can go to delivering glaucoma lasers unless they've got a significant amount of experience in glaucoma management, particularly gonioscopy. So I think that whilst there certainly could be a place for glaucoma lasers to be delivered by optometrists outside of the hospital eye service, I think that it would certainly need to still be done under the care of a glaucoma specialist optometrist. I think that the idea of delivering laser treatment outside the hospital is definitely something that's very positive in terms of patient care. This could provide closer access for patient. It also could help develop and expand clinical capacity. I think that if steps were taken to move glaucoma lasers outside of the hospital, a really clear and robust safety networks and systems would need to be in place just to make sure that that ongoing care of the patient was put in place.
Do you think this treatment will be offered on the high street? And if so, what would be the timescale?
I think that there's lots more steps that we need to take prior to that to have the right appropriately trained optometrists in place to be able to deliver laser in the community. If optometrists were interested in developing their skills and working towards delivering glaucoma laser procedures, I'd certainly advise and encourage them to work towards developing their skills and knowledge in glaucoma management. If they're not involved in any enhanced schemes, perhaps looking to try and get involved in enhanced schemes in their areas. I would certainly recommend doing the College of Optometrist qualifications in terms of the professional certificate, higher certificate and diploma.
Do you think SLT treatment means patients won't need glaucoma eye drops?
Whilst I would love to think that SLT laser would mean the end of glaucoma topical medications for patients, I don't think that we're quite there. I think that the really encouraging results of the LIGHT trial was just simply how many patients were able to be drop-free by 3 years after undergoing the laser procedure. So this will, without any shadow of a doubt, have a significant impact on patients in terms of reducing the number of patients that are reliant on topical medications. In terms of stopping eye drops completely, the reality is for some patients, SLT won't work at all. Fortunately, that's a small proportion of patients, but there will still be those patients that will require treatment of some sort. For other patients, SLT may show a good response. However, they may need additional eye drops to help lower their eye pressure, but hopefully a lower drop burden than they'd have if they hadn't had selective laser trabeculoplasty. When patients come to the hospital for the first visit and a diagnosis is made of ocular hypertension or glaucoma, I think that can be quite a lot of information for patients. It can be a little bit over-facing. And I think that for some patients, the idea of taking an eye drop as opposed to having a laser treatment will seem like a lower risk, more appealing option. Without any shadow of a doubt, the opposite will be the case for an awful lot of patients for whom the idea of taking drops for a significant number of years or even the rest of their life will be really unappealing.
Paddy, thank you. So to sum up, what to you is the most exciting outcome of this research and the development of the new technique?
I think the key outcome from the LIGHT study was really what I would say are staggering results, that so many patients were drop-free by 36 months after undergoing the laser procedure.
Thank you for telling us about the selective laser trabeculoplasty technique. It'll be interesting to see how the findings of the LIGHT study change the way optometrists treat open-angle glaucoma and ocular hypertension.